Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 placings. My name is Davey, and with me tonight is Phil and Aaron. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Pretty good. I liked your placings. I'm sensing a trend now.
Is it? What's the trend? Describe it for me.
I'll let the listener see if they can determine it as well.
All right. as always, for context, we're recording after Adepticon and before the release of the next two warbands. I should say Adepticon 2019. Thanks to those who reached out and dropped us some comments. Those are always greatly appreciated. We read them. I try to respond to them when I can. If some get by without, we're still reading them. I appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at WTHcast or shout us on Facebook when we post up. And then we're also hanging out on the Discord. We're going to get into Phil's deck from conception to execution. But before we do that, we're going to check in on what we've been up to. Phil, what have you been up to?
Yeah, so after having wrapped up Adepticon, I am starting to think about next warband. Have had a little bit of time to sort of ponder some other deck ideas now, and I'm thinking about either switching back to Eyes to do a control deck,
yeah,
or trying something very different and doing a defensive Molochs deck.
Hot. I like it both.
But I think I might build them both, try them out. I don't think we're planning to do any more tournaments for a little while, so I have some time to do some practicing. And then otherwise, other hobby stuff, getting my corn army going. Now that Adepticon's over, I've got some time to really dig into that. And it's my first conversion project, and it's started kind of I messed a guy up a little bit, but I'm fixing him. Gonna see how this goes. It's a lot more time intensive than I expected, so we'll see how far I can get, but I'm hoping to have it all, at least get 2,000 points done for next year to take it to Adepticon.
All right, big plans for Acon.
Yeah.
Next year, that'll be fun. Yes.
Quite the lead up, the ramp up time.
Sure.
Well, when I'm converting every single model, it's going to take a while.
Yeah. It's sounds like you need a project manager. I know a guy for the job.
Yeah.
Let's get some Gantt charts.
Oh my god!
There it is. For myself, I don't think I mentioned last episode. One thing that I did enjoy doing at Adepticon was live discording the finals. There was Dean's Thorns versus Amon's Cursebreakers, and got on the general sub Discord. I don't even know what they're called. Discord channel for Underworlds, and was blazing away, fast thumbs, trying to do a live sports coverage of it. I was kind of getting into it, you know, talking about reactions, you know, like, oh, you know, Dean's going into the tank, he's thinking hard now, all right, looks like he's got a plan moving forward. I don't know, it was a lot of fun. And there are a small handful of people who are listening along, and they seem to get a kick out of it too, so.
Have we found a new career path for you? Like esports, like commentator?
As long as I can get by on about 5% of my current salary, that'll work out for me just fine.
Well, there's a lot of money in it these days, so we'll have your people talk to my people.
Okay, you got some good agents that we can... All right. In other news, for me, looking at the next warband, I'm basically falling in love with every warband that I read a deck about, so... I was looking at the different decks in the top 10 and looking at Michael Carlin's Steel Hearts deck from Steel City Underworlds, and I haven't settled on anything yet, but I don't know. There's a lot of fun stuff to try out. I'm enjoying having the world as my oyster. But
you gotta make that meme of the boyfriend and girlfriend walking while he's like looking back over his shoulder.
There you go.
And just Davey's deck, every other deck.
Yeah. Not that I probably want to do this, but especially intriguing. There were like two Chosen Axis players that went 20 and 21 at Acon.
Oh yeah.
Which seemed wild to me. But so there's that. And then we're going to be doing a little work, maybe trying to set up a league here in town. There, we got a new manager for the games workshop, or I guess the Warhammer store here. And he was reaching out, looking to get something set up. So that'd be super cool if we could build our community up a little more here. Then Aaron won't feel like he ever has to play. Right now, he just plays out of obligation to us. So.
Well, actually, you say that if you do end up putting a league together and there's promos on the line, I'm going to have to find whatever the next like latest filth is, put it together so that like I can have my best shot at getting those sweet, sweet prizes.
Sure.
Makes sense.
Is that a good time for is it not just cheaper for you to be on eBay when you look at
money? I mean, I was going to say define cheaper, right? Like, maybe a mixture of the both. We'll have to see. I like to have different streams, in this case, promo streams.
Oh, sure, yeah. Redundancy, right?
Yeah, it's better to play it safe.
All right. Well, other than playing it safe, what have you been doing?
Not a whole bunch. Now the corn is all done. I'm thinking I'll probably go back and put Molochs together, too. That doesn't seem like it would take too much time to just assemble them and get them all set up. I'm still sort of playing catch-up to everybody else to make sure that I have all the warbands put together. We'll do Molochs, and then, I don't know, we'll see what else grabs me. Honestly, I'm kind of looking forward to when the Sylvaneth come out. I am sort of jazzed to assemble those guys and see what their deal is. So maybe I keep my dance card free until then.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Aaron, though, speaking of promos, how do you feel, like, would you be interested if they designed some new ones, like, I don't know, like the Cataphrane Relics or something like that? Like, if they did the full set, that seems like a thing that's going to happen soon, right?
I can't tell if you're messing with me, because if you know something I don't, spill the beans, dude.
I do. They already have them.
I might be messing with you.
So, we discover that you got to update your tracker, because they were giving, for best painted, you get a full set of the Cataphrane Relics promos. But
son of.
So how are your painting skills, Aaron?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I hear my kids are calling. I gotta go. I'll be back later. No. Okay. Interesting painting, huh? Well, we'll figure something out.
Well, on top of everything else, I think these are gonna be pretty tough to get, because as opposed to like the top 32 got to pick up the promo keys. Those were just going to that one top 1, 2, 3 painted. So
what are they doing to me? Come on.
Just making you feel real, real bad. So
they probably saw that there's like, hey, there's this guy and he's trying to get them all. How can we make this
that's my fault. I put that out there in the universe and now it's coming back to bite me. I get it.
All right. You got anything else, or we kind of?
No, that's about it.
All right. I can't think of other ways to torture you right now, so we'll move along. But
was this not enough? Are you not entertained?
Yeah, I mean, I could be more entertained. Maybe Phil can manage that for us. So our episode overview is going to be our episode. Welcome, British episode. Our episode today is going to be kind of the same thing we did last one. Conception, execution. This time we're looking at Phil's Magor's Fiends deck. So we'll get his original concepts, kind of what and why he picked, and then we'll go through his objective deck, power deck, what he learned in practice, and how it went at Adepticon. So, Phil, take it away. Original concept. Why did you pick Magor's, and what did you decide to do with it?
So, in a nutshell, I picked Magor's because I picked Iron Skulls. But to elaborate on that, so I was originally, after Wapaka, thinking about doing this really sort of weird plink damage orc deck, which kind of worked, but I figured for a tournament it probably would be very, very difficult to even break top 50%. So I switched them over to like more aggressive, like you'd normally run them, and I just kept feeling like, Magor's could probably do this better. And like, I just kept thinking that. And so I was like, okay, well, I think I've got to just run Magor's instead. And it did work quite a lot better with Magor's. So yeah, that was sort of the idea coming through. And then just realizing that giving myself better tools to work with would make that idea that much better. But yeah, the original plan was that it was going to just be this super hyper aggressive deck running lots and lots of score immediately cards, because that's sort of what Magors are good at. And what I realized in our practice games in doing that is that when it went well, and then you just sort of got the train rolling. And if it didn't go well, you got stomped because you couldn't score anything. So I had to sort of switch it up a little bit.
There was like no insurance. So even me, when I was running a pretty aggressive Godsworn deck, I would just diagonal and delay engagement for as long as possible because I at least had some other ways to score, and you were kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And then you could just sort of, mostly with Alo, pick me off. And
Alo for president.
Some bad feels there when you're like, huh, I got, you know, I'm on shields for defense. I've got 4 wounds on every guy, and I'm being killed by the dude who hits for 1 damage. So to run down the objectives that I ended up with, so I should have been better prepared for this and broken these down like Davey did last time, but I did not, so bear with me. Running down the objectives here, I had no escape, show of strength, advancing strike, conquest, escalation, master of war, victorious duel, victory after victory, fired up, quick on your feet, strong start, and what armor. No escape, that's just charging 3 times. I'd had it in the deck the entire time, because obviously with Magors, you're going to be wanting to charge people. But it also sort of works as a insurance card, because even if you miss all your attacks, you can still score it. And it's a score immediately, so it's a way to get some glory started early on.
And I would include this in Reavers with their version, which is Blood for the Blood God. It felt a little easier with them because they all started faster, and you had Karsus with a ranged attack.
For sure.
Did you ever find this difficult to score, or?
Only if I drew it in round 1, and only if people were playing longer deployments.
Mm-hmm.
So if they would go diagonal, or if they would go hallway, although I don't think anyone ever deployed hallway. If they were to do that, it would basically mean that the chances of me having 3 charges available on turn 1 were next to 0. Especially if I ended up killing the closest person.
Sure.
And so that's another sort of weird thing about it, is like, if you ended up killing too many people, you wouldn't be able to score no escape.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, I know, right? But then I guess also the reverse.
First realm problems.
If you have too many, you know, you lose 2 people and all of a sudden you can't score the card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of a risk to go with the reward of sort of an easier score. Show of strength, advancing strike, and strong start were all included for basically the same reason. It's kill somebody, score an extra glory. It's not terribly hard to do, and it just makes sense for Magors. I don't think there's a lot more that needs to be said about those. I guess the only one that's maybe less appealing is show of strength, in that you have to do it with Magor. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the timing just isn't right. And so trying to line up a kill with Magor is not always what you want. And it sort of forces you into a suboptimal choice for activations or deployment. But it's still a pretty easy one. Some cards that got added sort of late to address the hyper-aggressive issue, to try and sort of balance out some of the scoring. I put in Quick on Your Feet and Fired Up. Both of those are pretty easy to score. Fired Up, especially because I had the Korn version of its Furious Inspiration,
yeah,
which does sure. the same thing as Inspiration Strikes. And, you know, if you draw into that, that's basically a free glory. You just play a ploy and you get that. And then quick on your feet actually combos with no escape. If you score escape, sure. You'll basically score quick on your feet.
Yeah.
And it also was a nice insurance policy for those games, like you say, where if I'm getting stuck having to be far away from people, at least I can, as I'm just moving my fighters into combat, I can score something off of that.
Did you ever find yourself mulliganing specifically to look for some of these to get your first round started right?
I never did, and I think a lot of that had to do with, like I said, people weren't trying to make me go long ways. Mm-hmm. Almost all my games were just squared up, and that was actually very surprising, because in a lot of our practice games, you would invariably win the roll-offs and then choose to make it diagonal. Mm-hmm. So I was just, I think, I don't know if it was just maybe people not thinking about how Magors are kind of slow, or if it was because it was already something they needed it to do for their strategies. But I never really needed to mulligan, because starting with things like Advancing Strike was a really good thing, because I was only ever like 2 or 3 hexes away from my opponent. Go ahead.
I know when you've got these things stacked, like Advancing Strike and what armor or Show of Strength or something, where like a single kill can score a lot. I know from my side, I was finding that it was worth it to use whatever defensive tech I could to deny that first kill, whether it was move backwards or burn last chance on someone, even like burn it on Grawl. Like I don't actually care if Grawl lives or dies, but if I let you kill Grawl, maybe Magor killing a little dog just got 4 glory somehow, you know? So,
it
meant that I was always running scared from that first, kill of the round, because it felt like there was so much potentially riding on that, that it could, even that one kill could blow the game wide open.
Yeah. And I think some opponents were potentially feeling that as well, just because it never seemed like people were holding on to rebound or last chance. It was always, they just use it as soon as they had it. And I don't know if that was conscious or they just didn't want anybody to go out, but it's definitely a thing, which we can get into a little bit more when we get to the matches. So let's see. So then another one that was a very late add, it was probably the last thing that I added to my deck, I dropped, I can't even remember what it's called now. But it's you score it if you kill 2 fighters. And I was just finding it to be too inconsistent. So I switched out for Master of War as a bit of a safer play. Cause it doesn't rely on kills, essentially, was what I needed there.
Yeah. It feels like scoring immediately for 2 kills is helping you against bigger numbers, but that's already a matchup you're okay against, because it's some of the upgrades you're carrying and that sort of thing. So I felt like how did you feel about what Master of War is, what you put in, you said?
Yep, Master of War. I think I scored it pretty much every time I drew it.
Yeah.
It was pretty easy.
Especially with that many score immediately, right? So.
Yep. Lots of score immediately, so it made it easy. Victory after victory is in the same vein with, like, if I can score all these other quick things, victory after victory just kind of flows into that. And that ended up being the case in a lot of games where I'd score 2 or 3 score immediately, and then all of a sudden it would be a 7 swing turn. Mm-hmm. So pretty juicy there. Escalation, I find, is just a staple. I don't know if I've ever built a deck without it. Not a lot to say about that one. Conquest actually turned out to be a huge deal for almost all my games, because even if I had my back to the wall with 1 person left alive, I could still pick up 2 glory at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's something that's worth revisiting. I think, and like you, I think last time when we recorded, you had mentioned that somebody had picked up denial against you because you hadn't been thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if those cards had fallen out of favor, but now because they're not as commonplace, that you could get away with scoring with those a little more easily, and they can be a big deal scoring two or three.
Sure. And I think Conquest maybe more so even than Denial, because theoretically Denial, I see it once and then okay, well, make sure that I get somebody
in every time. Let that happen again.
Conquest can be a lot harder to stop as long as you get deep enough into their territory.
For sure. And then last one in here is Victorious Duel. In theory, it's fine. You know, I want to be killing people, but it's kind of the same as Show of Strength, where making the trigger be on Magor means that if I didn't have him set up for a kill on their leader before I drew the card, it often meant that it was entirely out of reach, either because they were already dead or they were too far away. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the one card that I really wasn't very happy with. I don't know if I ever scored it, and that would probably be dropped, though I'm not really sure for what at this point. So
did you ever consider the Magor specific one that has Riptooth do the killing?
No. I have seen plenty of decks that rely on loading Riptooth up and using him to get kills like that, but I don't think that he's any better at it than Magor is. He's just a little faster. But I think you do still have to tech him up to make sure he can get that kill. But I don't know. I've never tried it. Maybe I should just give it a whirl now that we're not in tournament mode. Just see how it goes. But that was pretty much a rundown of the objective deck. Like I said, I think I was pretty happy with most of it. So not a lot that I would change there. So power deck. I ended up with 22 cards. I don't know if that was a correct choice or not, but it didn't seem to do too badly for me. After our episode with Steven Van, I had done some thinking about trying different setups of how many cards to run and seeing how it worked out. And having included improvisation, it didn't really ever seem to make a huge difference whether I was at 24 versus 22 versus 20. Mm-hmm. So I just decided I'd, you know, split the difference and go with 22 and keep just a couple extra tools in the toolbox. So just run them down quick. I most all of them were either designed around moving faster or being more aggressive. So some things that were useful for trying to get some better kills. I had Glory to Khorne, which is just plus one extra dice. Had Mighty Swing, which is something that was pure gold in all of our practice games.
Yeah, yeah.
I would consistently hit three fighters with it and kill maybe two of them.
I'd have the trembling lower lip, single tier.
Yeah. At Adepticon, I didn't ever get to play it. It never came up. So,
as in there was never an opportunity. There was never people standing close enough together.
Or? No, there was never an opportunity to use it. So I don't know if I just had some bad luck there, or if I should actually consider just taking it out, but it has worked too well for me to think that I should just drop it. But I don't know. My turn and Ready for Action, kind of self-explanatory. They're super flexible in what you can do with them. Getting the attack out of sequence is great for Magors, because you just need more attacks to offset the chance of misses.
And I'll say from the other side, where I'm like, oh my God, like I do not I'm tired of swinging at Gartok or Zarkus where they get to gore fist me back. I'll go get one of these other guys and then they might turn you. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
How does this?
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you're already holding on to some nice upgrades, those my turn swings can be like pretty darn deadly. So yeah, that's pretty much all the ones I was using for pure sort of aggressive stuff. Furious Inspiration kind of fits into that vein. In a lot of cases, it actually does twofold. It's getting you an extra movement because they all get one faster when they're inspired. And then it either gives you extra dice or extra damage, depending on who you put it on. So that's really working out pretty great. I actually, one thing that I sort of came away with is that I think putting Inspiration Strikes as well as Furious Inspiration would not have been a bad use of ploys, because it's effectively a upgrade for plus one movement and something else good for whichever fighter I use it on, which is better than just about any upgrade. So something to consider for next time. And then in the actual movement categories, to sort of offset the starting speed of three on Magors, I included Hidden Paths, Spectral Wings, Commanding Stride, and sort of in a different kind of vein, using Transfixing Stare. So that way it's sort of like, well, at least I know if I charge in, I can keep somebody else from moving in or moving away after I've done my move. I didn't really get to use it that much. I would be interested to see if other people had more success with it. I know it's a very strong thing to be able to put a movement token on somebody, but I just did not get a ton of mileage out of it.
Yeah, and that was one I almost put in at the last minute, and I just felt like I hadn't practiced enough with it, and so I didn't really know. It felt like there's some finesse to that card, right? So.
Yeah, well, the timing is so big with it. Like, sure, I could just use it and give you a move token, but is that really a good time to be giving you a move token? Like, I think a lot of the time I didn't use it because I didn't know if it was the right time, and that just meant that I ended up holding on to it too long, and then it just wasn't very useful anymore. And then my own, like, one and only defensive ploy was Demonic Resilience, which I love this card all the way back from the start of the game when it was in the Reavers
Insensate
deck. Yeah, they're Insensate Rage, which does basically the same thing. Just because it is so flexible to be able to say, okay, I know that in my next turn I'm only taking one damage. So you can choose to either be hyper-aggressive and not have to fear retaliation, or if you're needing to start winding down a round where you need to just make sure people survive, like if you're fighting Malog, where you can just pop it quick and just say, like, well, I know that I'm safe for one more turn while I sort of figure out what I'm doing here. It's just super strong. I don't know if I would ever run without it, just because being able to turn someone's attack off is both really good just because it saves my fighter, but I know from seeing the other side of it with either Reavers or Magors that it sort of gets in your head a little bit and makes you change your game plan. Suboptimal activations and stuff, which I kind of always like having that.
Sure. And it comes out right after that activation and that power step. You've been building up your plan, and then it's just kind of a gut punch on the other side.
So yeah, assuming I remember you have it.
Right. Well, I think that's Davey's point, right? Like, you're sitting there watching me do my turn, planning your turn, and then you see this card come out, and it's like, oh, that plan that I just spent all this time thinking about what I was going to do doesn't work anymore. And then you've got to quickly shift gears. And
to quote the Joker, do I look like the kind of guy that has a plan?
Wild card. Fair point. But yeah, so that's all the ploys that I was running. Like I said, there's just a few things that were sort of question marks there, but I don't know. I don't know if I would really change it. So yeah, then upgrades. Feels sort of the same, where a lot of it's aggressive. Trying to help dice a lot. So for those things, running Brutal Charge, which can go on any of the sort of human fighters, and it's just they get an extra dice when they charge, which I would almost always put it on Magor, because when he inspires, he just gets plus one damage, but he's still swinging with two dice. Mm. So sort of using that as an offset for his inaccuracy. There's no respite, which I got to play it in almost all my games, but I don't think it ever triggered. But you get an extra attack when your fighter dies, which I thought this was a late add as well. And I thought that the sort of defensive aggro here would be kind of something to help sort of dissuade people from attacking a certain fighter, but
when you say it never went off, is it possible that it never went off because people were like, I guess I'm not going to swing at that one? Or,
well, so either the people who had it didn't die and I would have expected them to, like, I think I had maybe Zarkus with one health left and I put no respite on him because I was like, well, he's probably going to die here soon, and then he just didn't. So sort of like me thinking ahead for something that didn't really come to fruition. And then other cases where I would get shot from range and then they don't have a way of swinging back, sure, because right, you have to be, you know, they only have one range tax. So sort of an interesting weakness that I guess I did know, because you'd shot me all a whole bunch with Olo, but I didn't expect to feel it quite so much.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you added it late enough that we didn't have a lot of reps to see how that...
I think that's true. I included rage-fueled attacks, just because I also had great strength, and incredible strength is restricted, so it's just another way of having a plus one strength card, which is sort of a surprising need for Magors. The two, if you can call them Dangle Bros, only stay at two damage, so unless you start giving them damage bonuses, they're not really that lethal, which is sort of an interesting thing to think about, because you sort of think about Magors as being this, like, oh, they're really choppy, they're gonna kill everybody, but their average damage is actually pretty low unless you give them some good upgrades. Then I've got Wrathful Blows for Gartok, which is, again, just plus one dice, but it's just all the time. This is probably one of my favorite upgrades in this deck, if not in the game, because just having plus one dice all the time is really strong, especially with the Gore Fist. Having that suddenly be on three dice is really juicy, and I like to combine that with Concealed Weapon, which I had in here as well for another way to add some damage. So then suddenly Gartok is rolling four dice for his normal attacks with Concealed Weapon and three dice for his Gore Fist, which did get me a kill in one of my games. So,
oh, nice.
Super juicy. last one for bonus damage is Glory Seeker. I was expecting a lot of Stormcast of all varieties and Malogs and Magors, so I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm gonna have lots of people that I can have this work against, turned out that that was not really the case. I ended up only really having Malog to use this against.
Interesting. It was kind of a dead draw for you a bunch.
Yeah. Strangely enough, against Reavers and Eyes, it's pretty much impossible. There's just the one fighter in each board band that you can trigger it on. And then against Ghosts, I guess you've got two, but Varklav is usually sitting so far back that you can't really reliably use it. So sort of a weird one where I think it was still the right choice to have it, but it ended up being a dead card a lot of the time. And then finally, we got Potion of Rage. Pretty obvious choice there. I think pretty much everybody runs it that needs to do attacks. I don't think there's much else that needs to be said about that. So as you can see, stacked for lots and lots of aggro stuff. Mm-hmm. Getting extra dice, getting extra damage. Makes or breaks Magors. If you can get the kills, you can get the wins. If you can't, you're sunk.
So heading in after practice, that's kind of where you're feeling you're at is as if those attacks land. Were there any spots you felt like were a blind spot or an Achilles heel where you were real worried about running up, or did you feel pretty okay?
No. I guess? In all my games, it all hinged on dice. It was never, which I think I had mentioned earlier, where it was sort of this surprise that no one tried to use movement as my weakness, because that I think really is the weakness for Magors. They can be slow, and if you can just keep them out of combat, they're likely not going to be able to score much. But no one tried that, so I guess good for me, but not what I would have expected. I was expecting to need to rely on those movement ploys quite a bit more than I actually had to. Mm-hmm. And then I guess sort of to go along with those aggro upgrades is also then to sort of capitalize on that is Trophy Hunter and Tome of Offerings.
Oh, yeah.
Having both is crazy and probably shouldn't be allowed. But yeah, that was sort of, if I would get them out and I could get kills with them, it would pretty much let me run away with games. It didn't actually happen that many times, but the few times it did happen, it meant, you know, a change of two or three glory for a game.
Yeah, I remember it feeling just oppressive on the other end where I was like, what am I going to do?
And if you get both of them out at once, it's very rough, because all of a sudden either you're having to deal with two fighters that can score extra glory or one fighter who is just piling it on every time they get a kill. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised if Tome of Offerings didn't shift over to restricted. It's being used a ton right now. If not, maybe going to banned. I don't know. We'll see. I think that'll sort of play out depending on how many people win tournaments with it. But that's what it is.
Restricted is fine. But yeah.
And then the one defensive upgrade, which actually is sort of a gem, Gory Visage. I put this in here just thinking it's sort of a nice option. It'll slow down Magor getting killed, but that one damage reduction changes the maths a lot, surprisingly, and people would tend to forget about it. So then all of a sudden they come screaming in for a 4 damage hit on Magor, and I'd be like, okay, so you did 3 damage. And they'd be like, oh, right. and then they'd be in a really bad spot because they're sitting right next to Magor and probably a couple other guys. So that's the deck. That's all of it. So some lessons learned just sort of overall. I think, like I said, dice are super important. If you're missing your attacks, I would say even if you missed, you know, 3 of your attacks in a game with Magors, you're probably in a pretty bad spot. unless your opponent is also not like really racking up glory, just because you rely on it so heavily, or at least my deck relied on it so heavily for scoring objectives that, mm-hmm. you know, if I miss any attacks, I really felt it.
Well, and especially early on, right? Because it was, like that, not only is it a miss and you're not scoring that big stack of objectives, but you're not getting inspired, which makes it harder to get your next hit and so on and so on forth.
Very true. That was more true in our practice games than it was at Adepticon, which is strange. There were a couple of times where me and my opponent would both have slow first turns, and it would feel bad because I'd be behind. But then as soon as I sort of got into the groove, it would be like, okay, and suddenly I'm back up 5 glory out of nowhere. Because like you had mentioned earlier, being able to sort of chain 1 kill into 2 score immediately and then drawing into, you know, something else that I can score, I turn that 1 kill into 5 glory and all of a sudden I'm back in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had some nice comebacks that way. And I think we'd also mention that a number of times that mobility is sort of the thing that I really learned could break me without anything having really happened. Just because I couldn't really fight if I couldn't get to my opponent.
Right.
And luckily that didn't really happen in Adepticon, but it was a stark lesson to be learned in practice. So, I mean, glad that I learned it there and not at the tournament, but still a super important lesson learned for anybody who wants to run hyper-aggressive Magors. So then the actual games, how did I do at Adepticon?
Yes,
so,
tell us.
So my first match was against Ghosts, a gentleman named James. It was 2 very close games. I believe the first game I only won it by 1 glory. It was a lot of sort of back and forth killing chain rasps, and then he'd do, you know, what Ghosts do, and he'd like, I'm going to float through your guys and score immediately off of that, and then I'm going to, you know, oh, you played a reaction, well, I'll score a glory off of that. And so he was just getting these, like, little bits of glory here and there for not really doing much. And he had positioned his queen really far back in the game that we start the first game, and so I just figured, well, okay, he's got all his chain rasps up front, I'll just cruise through them, and then, you know, I'll be upgraded and inspired and it'll be easier to kill the queen. But when she decided to come back out, she started lighting me up pretty good. So it started to feel a little dicey there, but I think ultimately I was sort of right in my thinking, because I did manage to kill her, if I'm remembering correctly. And at that point, it was kind of like, okay, you've got, you know, a couple chain rasps and Varklav left, and that's not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Second game, he sort of changed tactics with the queen, put her quite a bit closer to the front, and was trying to, I think, use her sort of as a deterrent. So I actually sort of played some avoidance, because he has so many fighters that he couldn't really stay away from me. And I kind of used that to start picking off some chain rasps while staying away from the queen until I was ready to engage. And again, it was sort of the same sort of back and forth. I'd pick up some kills and then he'd pick up some of his little stuff. And I got 3 over him in that one, and so overall the glory differential of 4, but I mean it could have gone either way at any time. It was really good games, great way to start off the tournament. James was a really great player to kick things off with.
Was this one where you felt like you got a lot of help from having practiced against Cameron? Were they parallel,
you know,
or I think two different?
Just having knowledge of what to expect from scoring helped. Just sort of knowing what the common Ghosts cards are, I think was useful. But Cameron plays much more aggressively with Ghosts than James did. And I think in some ways I think that aggressive play style might have been better against the Magors, just because once one or two fighters drop in the Magors warband, all of a sudden you're running up on just not having enough activations to get the job done.
Your output starts dropping pretty bad.
Yeah, because usually you need to charge to get your attacks in. And then if you've only got two fighters, that means you're at most getting two attacks, right? So sort of an interesting sort of concept of, like, you should be aggressive towards the guys who are trying to kill you, but I don't know, that can definitely backfire on you as well. So having gone 2-0 in the first round, I got paired up with Sean, who was running Malog. And this was sort of kind of similar to Davey's matchup from his Malog games from our last episode. I remember, I think, that you had to go to three matches, and mm-hmm. one of them was a tie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the same way for me. I knew from practicing against Malog that the only sort of defense is a really strong offense. You just have to kill him, especially with Magors.
Yeah, especially with yours, where you don't have a ton of movement tricks, so it's not like you're gonna sprint past him and kill all the squigs. You're gonna have to go toe to toe with him.
Yeah, and not a lot of passive scoring either, so it's not like I can just avoid him. So I knew going into it that I needed to attack him, and that's exactly what I did. And I believe by the end of round one, I had dropped Malog. I was just sort of one right after the other. Everybody just went in and got him for a little bit, and over three or four attacks dropped him. And at that point, that pretty much sort of shut that game down. So after that first one, I was feeling pretty good, because usually things don't go so well against Malog. And in the second game, it kind of started the same way. I sort of blitzed into him. But I believe I just missed a couple of the later attacks. So then he was inspired and started, he got a couple kills. I did eventually put Malog down again, but at that point, I think I had just one fighter left. And we sort of slugged it out until it was just the Bat Squig and the Spite Shroom. And so I thought, well, okay, I'm pretty deep in his lines. He's sort of cornered. I'll be able to go in and probably kill them. What I wasn't counting on was hidden paths for Spite Shroom so that he could go all the way to the other side of the board. The
power behind the throne.
And then the Bat Squig just sort of shifted a few hexes over, so I was outside of charge range, and I was only the one fighter. So I was like, oh, well, I'll have to try and draw into, like, Spectral Wings so that I can get another kill, because I knew the score was really close at that point. So I spent a couple turns trying to draw into this, and I was like, well, whatever, I've got Conquest, so maybe that'll be enough. And it turned out that I was one power card short of being able to draw to Spectral Wings. And so we ended up tying that game when I used Conquest. But I kick myself in retrospect thinking about that game, because he had already moved both of his fighters to just run away from me.
Mm-hmm.
I was standing one hex away from an objective hex,
mm-hmm.
and I knew the score was really close. So if I'd taken one step to the side, I would have been on an objective, and I could have won on the tiebreaker. And I could have just won the game in two.
Yeah.
But that is not how it went, because I wasn't thinking about that. I was trying to draw through power cards instead, because I was too focused on the aggro. So kind of another lesson for aggro players. Don't lose sight of the game state. It can be real bad. Which then led into the absolute crushing that I got in the third round, Sean's dice got real hot And pretty much every single one of his attacks was a success and a crit. So on my one defense die, there was literally nothing I could do. So he just started stomping through all my guys. I think pretty much every action he killed a fighter. By the end of round two, he'd already wiped me out completely. So in glory differential, I managed to pick it up with a 4+ glory differential, but ultimately the round was a tie. So right now, after round two, Davey and I were sitting at the same.
You were 1-0 and 1, and I was 0-1 and 1. Yes. But we were talking about the danger of depending on how round three went, if we had both ended up 1-1 and 1, that we might play each other in round four.
Yeah.
So I told you if it looked like you were going to lose, you needed to come over and let me know, and I would throw the game so that so we wouldn't be on the same record.
At least it's not as bad as the guys who came, you know,
all the way 13 hours. Randall Slayton, Rob Mead, they ended up playing each other in round three, I think.
Yeah, guys they play against all the time.
Who won?
Rob took him down. Rob ended up way up there, I think. He ended up in maybe the top 10.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you did very well. I don't remember the exact placing, but that sounds right. So having tied then, that left me in some pretty short company. Not many people had draws, so I got paired with Phil, who is running Reavers, who Davey had gone up against in round one. Mm-hmm. And knowing how it had gone for Davey, having chatted between rounds, I was a little worried that he was going to be pretty cagey and be able to really put one over on me. And I think he had a really good game plan, and I think he had everything sort of lined up, but he had some atrocious luck. He missed almost all of his attacks, I think, including one with 5 dice, and he didn't roll a single success. So it was, it just sort of snowballed out of control, where it was like, I didn't even have to do much because Reavers couldn't land enough blows to sort of turn the tide. So not a whole lot to really say about that match. I felt a little bad, but I mean, it is a dice game, you know how it goes. So
it doesn't have to be.
Well, if you're Aaron, it doesn't have to be. So I rolled through that one 2-0. Not a whole lot to say other than that, though. Did pick up a 13 glory differential on that one, which I think was pretty important because the first two matches I had pretty small glory differentials. And that put me in pretty good spot. It was looking like I could maybe even edge myself into top 10, which I was stoked about. I had gone in with the hopes of being in the top 50%.
Yeah, 3 wins and a draw puts you right up just underneath the 4 winners. So
yeah. So went into round 4 feeling pretty darn good. Faced Brandon, who was playing Eyes. Congrats to Brandon for being the top placed Eyes player by a lot.
Yeah.
And also for eventually taking overall 6th place with his Eyes with 3 wins and a draw. Did really well. They looked really cool, different than anything else I'd seen somebody do for Eyes. And similar to how round 3 had gone for my opponent, round 4 kind of went that way for me. In our first match, I managed to pick up 1 glory.
Oh no.
I just couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a single kill, I believe. And one of those was prevented because of rebound. Mm-hmm. So Magor goes in for a charge on Narvia with cleave, so she's got a crit out of it, can't do that. And then he's like, okay, rebound, and rolls dodge. And so Magor just hits himself in the face instead of killing her. And it's just like, okay, I see how this is going to go.
All the more bitter because it was Narvia.
Yes.
Anything worse would have been Tourage.
The Dangle Bros. But But I mean, that is nothing to sort of say that Brandon wasn't putting it over on me as well, because he was powering up his and I love the strategy. I've seen people use it before with eyes, but you just stack a bunch of upgrades on Vortimus, and suddenly he's shooting for 3 or 4 damage, and using Archer's focus. Is that that's the name
re-roll,
of the upgrade?
Archer's focus.
Yeah. And I get the reroll with one of the dice, and suddenly it's pretty darn good odds that he's going to hit. And he just started smoking my guys. And so round one was a shutout. Round two was a lot closer, but again, he just was managing to just blow up my guys with Vortimus. So although in round two, I believe I swept the rest of his warband, it wasn't enough to pull it out, and he won it in two. And it was a great way to end. He also came from Canada. It was a 13-hour drive for him, so glad things could go well for him. Overall, that it was a great tournament. I was perfectly happy with where I ended up, hoping to do at least that well next time around.
And where did you end up? I don't think we even touched on this for me last time, but
I think I took 31st for where I ended up, which is quite a bit higher than I had sort of set my sights on. So perfectly happy with that. Percentage-wise, slightly worse than I did at WAPACA, but WAPACA was, I felt like, an odd duck, quite an easier field. So I think I did... I exceeded my own expectations quite a bit.
Yeah, there was some cool mirror there where you and I both, we got there very different ways. We both ended up 2-1-1. That's kind of a...
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much the same record. I think you edged it out on glory differential.
Yeah. I ended up 28th just on, I think I had like a plus 42 on my glory is what it worked out.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, great time. Lots of great people. Got to meet a whole bunch of other people in the community. Hopefully we can play against other people next year if people show and want to come and say hi to us and get some games.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're going to try and make a bigger go of it next time. I think it was a good sign for an event that I think we both came away from that being like, oh, you just played Underworlds all day. You know what I want to do is play some Underworlds.
Yeah. So. I wish. Yeah. Yeah. That they had the friendly tournament the next day.
Yeah.
And it looks like that was a good time. I wish we'd been able to stick around for that.
Yeah. Well, we got plans. So.
Did you see how many people played in that friendly?
I don't know how many people played in the friendly.
I don't either. For some reason, I'm going to throw out 50 something, but that is, I could not support that with any factual evidence whatsoever.
I would guess we can find it. If it's not on Wigglehammer, it's probably out there somewhere. Someone will know.
All right. Well, you got any last thoughts about your wars? Anything that, in retrospect, you wish you'd not had in there or anything like that? Or?
I mean, I think we touched on those as I went through the deck, but,
sure.
So like Victorious Duel felt like it didn't really work out. Not entirely sure about what to do with Transfixing Stare. I may need to think about that one some more. But overall I was pretty darn happy with the deck. Like I said, I exceeded my own expectations. I was perfectly happy with where I ended up. I mean, I think, you know, if things break a little bit differently, and if I was smart enough to step on an objective hex, I might have even done a little bit better. So can't complain.
Yeah. And I think I didn't touch on this enough last time, but you and I both, we ended up, when we got done, we went over and sat and watched the final. It was pretty incredible final.
Yeah.
Just
some very high level play.
Very highly. Yeah, I remember sitting there and being thinking like, oh man, I thought my play was up there, but watching these guys, like, I got a ways to go yet. So it was very fun. Very fun to watch, inspiring to watch, and there were just some huge moments, great moments on there. So
yeah, big swings. Definitely.
Yeah, I was getting anxious. I had to stand up. You know, like poker players got to stand up and walk away from the table. I did that once. I'm like, I'm not even playing. So, but yeah. Anyway, that has been the completion of our Adepticon coverage. We're gonna get our heads together, figure out what our topic for next episode's gonna be. We got a couple of possibilities. We might talk about going on Tilt. We might take a dive into reaction cards. We got a couple of things. If there's something you'd really like to hear, of course, let us know. You can do that at WTHcast or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. You can get all the Mortal Realms content at www.themortalrealms.com. And as I've said before, if you drop us a review, it'd be great. Helps us out a lot. Your recommend listening for this episode is Too Much Blood, and that is by the Gaslight Anthem off of their handwritten album. You'll find the link in the show notes. For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
This is Aaron. Davey, I don't even know what I meant when I said with the rate you're going. What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Are you gonna die?
You're gonna like worry people. I was thinking that. I was like, yeah. People are gonna be like, what's wrong with Davey?
Davey's sick.
But then again, like we engender some sort of sympathy, and people are like, oh man, let's send them cookies and stuff. And then all of a sudden you're riding high. And then I'll tell you what, you know what people like even better? Like a comeback, like a redemption, but like, oh man, he's fine. He survived.
You're playing the long game here. I see.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Definitely.